The Attorney General, as a result, has saved the country over 10 trillion Ghana cedis. All the evidence is there.
Welcome back. This is Newsfile here on Joy News on Joy 99.7 FM and all our social media platforms made possible by Bank of Africa, MTN, Ashesi University, Robert and Sons Optical Services, My Way, Syntex Tanks, and Flamingo Paint. And we get into the second thematic area for the show today, and we're talking about the State of the Nation address as put out by President Akufo-Addo in Parliament. And I'm sure my guests in the studio will not forgive me if I don't give them 30 seconds each to wrap up on the anti-LGBTQ. I said I wasn't going to say the anti-LGBTQ bill is a proper human sexual values and family values bill.
Even the long title has
Okay, so briefly.
Yes, I mean, I've heard the comments made by the UK, is it the MP?
The UK MP, and then the US ambassador.
The UK MP executed sat in Parliament and they executed Brexit. Because 53% of British, just 53%, said they wanted Brexit. They respected the will of the people. The UK House of Commons is not dictated to by any foreign entity what they should do. The US ambassador in Ghana is, I've followed her career from Malawi. She's been always an advocate of LGBTQ rights, even in Malawi. And she's come to Ghana and doing the same thing. If she thinks that the most qualified people in Ghana are LGBTQ people, then I wonder which circle she's been working in. Because MFR, you are one of Ghana's finest journalists. You are not an LGBTQ person. It would be an insult to the professionals of Ghana for her to suggest that the most qualified
you're making it difficult for me to come out and say.
Because I know you are not. Greetings to your everyone around you. I know you are not. But you see, the point we must make here, very simply, is that the US ambassador must bear in mind Article 42 of the Vienna Convention on International and Diplomatic Relations. She's a guest of the government of Ghana. She must respect us. Can you imagine?
And you've heard about the dualists we are.
Yes, but can you imagine? Can you?
As a nation, we are subscribed to it, so MFR, you should also remember that.
There is no international legislation or international treaty that imposes a right.
Human rights.
Anybody on the basis of their gender or sexual preference.
Okay, you wrap up on that.
And the last one I'm going to talk about, the US State Department, Matthew Miller. Why is he speaking from both sides of his mouth? 2 weeks ago, when people called on him to speak on Israel and his war in Gaza, he said it is not the business of the U.S. State Department to intervene in the business of sovereign states. Why? Is Ghana the 51st state of the U.S.? Ghana is a sovereign state. The Ghanaian ambassador to the U.S. has not and cannot issue a statement condemning the U.S. government for the assassination of blacks using American police or for the execution of a man using nitrogen gas.
30 seconds over, Sam George.
Let me just state finally, the IMF and the World Bank. Mm-hmm. Listen, the IMF and the World Bank, on your own website, you say you are diversity-oriented and inclusive in your outlook. If you truly are, you would not be taking offense with Ghana. Because if you say you are diverse, it means you accept all shades of opinion.
Okay.
If you say you are inclusive, you accept all shades of opinion, heterosexual or homosexual.
Thank you.
If we say we are heterosexual, you cannot punish us for that.
It's your turn. 30 seconds.
When I listen to those commentaries, MFA, my conclusion is that the world is governed by might. That is unfortunate. That because of the fact that, as traditionally my people will say, our hands are in their mouth. If we cough, they will bite. That's all that they are trying to do. As if we are not a sovereign state. Our very existence is contingent on what they do. That is because we have structured our economy to fall into their trap.
Okay.
And it's about time that we stood up to the challenges. And then we damn all that, suffer the consequences, and our children will celebrate us tomorrow.
Okay, thank you so much for sticking to the time, unlike Sam George. Well, let's get into SONA now. And thankfully, I have Dr. Thieu Champong. He's an economist and political risk analyst joining us via Zoom. I must say, I have Professor Godfred Bokping staying with me because there are some issues that I would want to touch based with him on. And also Kwame Sapongesiedu is a DND fellow on public health at CDD Ghana. He's a pharmacist, member of the Royal Pharmaceutical Society of Great Britain, Pharmaceutical Society of Ghana, and the Institute of Pharmacy Management International. Mary Awilana Ada, Executive Director, Ghana Integrity Initiative, also my guest. We also have Ben Boache, is the Executive Director, Africa Center for Energy Policy. We're focusing on energy. And then Fentuo Tahiru Fentuo, Joy Sports, will be focusing on our quest to save Ghana football. Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us here on NewsFile.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much. I would start with, for obvious reasons, with Mary Awilana Ada, is a female, so my biases goes towards there. So I'll start with her. She's the executive director of the Ghana Integrity Initiative. And really, we're listening with rapt attention to the president, hoping to hear issues about corruption and how he's been able to deal with the issue of corruption. Is it just me, or did you hear him talk about it?
Thank you very much, MFA. It's not just you. To our very disappointment, very, very disappointing indeed, the president went the route he has gone for the past few years. I believe if you look at the sonar for the past three or the about years, the president, either knowingly or unknowingly, have always decided to let corruption be in the back. Meaning that it's not an issue for them at all. And for us in civil society, we believe that if you are talking about issues of governance in this country and you neglect to speak to the issue of anti-corruption or the measures you are putting in place to fight corruption, then it means that you do not see it as a problem. Unfortunately, it is an ugly monster that keeps rearing its head. It is affecting this government. We hear of it on a weekly basis. And so for the president's final statement to this nation, it was our expectation that he would, as a matter of fact, concede to perhaps the not so effective fight against corruption. I say not so effective because if you pick their manifesto, they would have told you they wanted to put in place some measures, and they have done. However, when it comes to ensuring that those measures are working effectively, it has not happened. Mm. You have heard the lamentations of the special prosecutor. All the other anti-corruption institutions have had their tenure to talk about the issues around lack of resources to prosecute the agenda. And so for us, it's curious why anyone would not want to talk about this, particularly when just in January we put out the CPI, which showed that Ghana has stagnated for the fourth year running, meaning we have not done anything at all since 2020 in our fight against corruption. And so for the president and his speechwriters to neglect that means they either wanted to downplay the role of the fight against corruption or to say that they have done too much and the people of Ghana have evidence to that. Mm. Or perhaps when they downplay it, then people will not talk about it. But it's had, unfortunately, the reverse effect, because we have seen and we are saying it as it is that it's an unfortunate development, because the president knows that in this government, there have been so many issues of corruption and corruption-related offenses being committed. Mm-hmm. And there are some actually in court. So for the president to neglect that is a very interesting.
But could it also not be, Madam Mariada, could it also not be that they may have done so much in that regard? And then also the fact that it's a daily issue that is being addressed all the time. It's in the public domain, such that they may not have put it in the president's speech. Could it also not be the case? Or is it your view that we haven't done much in that regard? Mm-hmm.
Certainly not acceptable for an issue like corruption, which affects the economy. It affects every facet of our economic life as a people.
Okay.
It is because of corruption we find ourselves where we are, and I'm very sure Prof. Bokpeng would be talking about it. In even during COVID, mm-hmm. when we were supposed to be each other's keeper, when we were supposed to ensure that we ran the economy very well, a lot of issues arose because of corruption in procurement, corruption of funds that were given to this nation by some specific individuals, which parliament set up committees on, which the people of Ghana have spoken to, which members of government, I remember ADC mentioning that monies were shared to them. This is a critical priority issue. And for the president and this government to believe that it wasn't a priority and should not be spoken about, it's very unfortunate.
Okay.
And we would want to let the people of Ghana know that this is not acceptable. We need to, if we really want to fight corruption, then for a SONA that is reflecting what this country is doing, what we have done, and the road we are charting, to neglect the fact that there is a fight to promote good governance and ensure that the effective and efficient institutions are being run and that the executive is superintending over those very well.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very unfortunate development.
Okay. But one key issue that the president touched on, at least from the very beginning of his speech, was the issue about security. And I deliberately left out Professor Kwesi Enang in my introduction because I have a bottle of red wine to give to him. Professor Kwesi Enang is a security consultant who will be focusing heavily on the security issues. And I'm told he's not on yet. So once he joins us, we'll take a look at that. But let's talk about the issue of the economy. Very big issue. And Professor Godfred Bokpeng and Dr. Thierry Champong are with me on it. Really, you heard Dr. Thierry Champong, you heard the president at least take responsibility for everything, mentions that as the president and the executive, he takes the backstops with him on this. But really, let's take briefly your general overview of SONA when it comes to the issue about the economy.
Good morning, and good morning to all the panelists. And I hope you can hear me.
Definitely can.
Great, wonderful. So there's a lot to unpack on, mm-hmm. on the economy. But I think the constant here in terms of the defining feature is the fact that when the past government was leaving power, we were under an IMF program, and indeed, this current administration came to continue that. And as of this year, and also going into next year with the election, we will still be under an IMF program. And it's actually quite important because the government came into power promising economic stability, trying to turn things around and all of that. There have been some gains, and then there have been other areas that they've kind of struggled with going forward. But what stays or is constant in all of this equation really is that despite all of the rhetoric and despite all the things that we have said about, you know, turning the economy around and sustaining, we still pretty much have, you know, the IMF here with us. And there's still some structural issues that we haven't, you know, fully addressed. So I look at the president's statement, and you look at the economic record, both on the macro and the micro. So on the macro, often there are a number of indicators that we use, from exchange rates to inflation to GDP to reserves to current account to public debt. And even at a sectoral level, you can take industry, agric, and all of that. You can take all those indicators, and you can do an analysis of where we are or where we were 7 years ago and where we are now. And you can also do an analysis of where we are compared to last year. And if you look at what the president was saying, a lot of the baseline for his comparison was what happened last year, mm-hmm. right? So, for example, inflation now beginning to calm down and all of that. But if you actually extended that data point a little bit further back, you see that the story is a bit different, right, in that regard. And that's where I think, you know, we need to have a much deeper debate about the real state of the economy, but also how people feel it in terms of their everyday lived experience and their pocket, you know, going forward. So at the micro level, the president talked a bit about education and expanding free SHS, although there are still issues with equity. He didn't talk much for me about, you know, poverty and living standards, mm-hmm. which has actually become a big thing in the last, you know, few years with the cost of living crisis. And I didn't hear him also talk enough about, you know, Galamsey, what has been happening. Again, you go back the last few years and there was a lot of rhetoric, and we even have we had tax force being set up, and you name it. But the issue still sort of persists in terms of the degradation of our environment. And then on the other social side, yes, he talked a bit about, in fact, he spent the first maybe 7 or so pages of the 32-page document on security. But I think what was pregnant for me in what he said and in the question that you asked really was the issue of constitutional and governance reforms. So on page 6, latter part, president says that there is definitely, and I'm quoting him here, much room for improvement in the workings of the executive arm of government, the judiciary, and our parliament. And there is no ambiguity where the buck stops when it comes to responsibility for what happens in government. It would be an unwise president that would pretend to have all the answers and refuse the advice of his officials. But the fact remains that the president holds, you know, executive power, and that all of the cabinets, including the executive management team, the EMT that we've made a lot of noise about, all act in an advisory manner. I thought the president was being a little bit disingenuous here, if I'm being honest, in a sense that he was trying to sort of shield the vice president in a way, but also the fact that, yes, things have happened, and so, yes, ultimate responsibility lies with him because of the nature of the executive presidency that we practice. But the point for me is, if your people have advised, you've got advisors, you've got ministers, people who are experts, and they've proposed a particular course of action, and, you know, you decide to go against it, then that in a way tells us how imperial, right, the presidency almost has become, mm-hmm. to the extent that we must push, and this is where I'm looking forward to the manifesto proposals that are going to come, the extent to which we can curtail some of these powers to ensure that the government and governance works for each and every one of us. Because at the end of the day, even for those of us as citizens or even in the civic space, what that statement from the president basically means is that you can talk, you can do advocacy, you can do whatever you want,
okay,
but I can decide to go with it or not, depending on, you know, the particular interest that is at stake. And we've seen this from the ACA deal, we've seen this with EJAPA, we've seen it with SML, and a whole range of other things where, ordinarily, if you look at the evidence, it will tell you that we shouldn't have gotten ourselves in some of these deals and some of these transactions. So I'll just finish up with what a colleague of mine told me, you know, earlier this week. He says that we have become a NATO nation, NATO, no action, talk only. And that fundamentally reflects this idea that you've got an imperial presidency, an imperial sort of executive, that sometimes does not listen to the best of advice, because as the president says, the president holds the executive power and everybody under him, cabinet, ministers, everybody just acts in an advisory manner. And that cannot be good for the country going forward.
Okay, well, Professor Godfrey, the issue also about the IMF, he touches on it. Some have said it's not all doom and gloom, at least from what the president puts out $203 billion worth of bonds exchanged successfully. 5-month staff level agreements achieved. Coupons paid as at 20th of February 2024. Over 5 million CDs paid to domestic bondholders, even though we'll be hearing from some of them who say they are yet to receive their part, which he says is the largest payment in Ghana's history. He talks about completion of projects as well, amongst others. Really, it looks like it's not all doom and gloom. You've heard him. We may have stumbled, but we are rising again, aren't we?
Yes. Because this was the president last of the State of the Nation.
The last but one, we are told. At least there's one more to
last but one. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I was actually expecting a bit more, to be very honest with you. I was expecting a bit more because of also what the country is going through. The Ghanaians are going through a lot. And I can also see that it's weighing on the president. Right. So if you look at the president in 2017, the president in 2018, and even the early part of 2019, wow. I mean, the posture, the assertiveness, the direction, the hope, you can see all of that is gone. It's gone. It looks as though the president has left already. Right. And then probably it's like, can't wait for someone to take over. Something. I think that for this one also, I do agree that the president was a bit lean on blaming external factors. We are coming home to reality, mm-hmm. right? And I think that we should have accepted that much earlier. And then, in fact, this was where we missed it, and I've said it time and again. Where the country decided to major on it. On pride, I would say pride, because the call was right for Ghana to reach out to the IMF in the third quarter of 2021. Because when we exited COVID-19 and also the election, the fundamentals were quite clear, pointing to a certain direction. In fact, we didn't have to be an extraordinary person to come to the conclusion that Ghana was heading dangerously, and that with every month of delay, the vulnerability was just worsening. And so it wasn't difficult for some of us to say that the way we're going, we'll certainly end up with the IMF in an ambulance. I believe that was when leadership failed us. And we've had to pay dearly for that indecision, lack of proactiveness. And you could compare where Ghana was towards the second half of 2021 to the third quarter of 2021 to Kenya. Okay, the difference essentially, MFA, is that Kenya proactively reached out to the IMF and got $3 billion by way of a support, extended credit facility. If Ghana had reached out to the fund much earlier, mm-hmm. I don't think that the domestic debt exchange would have happened. It wouldn't have happened. Okay, and it was largely, and if you look at the discussion in Ghana here, it looked a bit some way for me. We won't go today, we won't go tomorrow, and all of that. Look, it was just pride, but that doesn't manage the economy. Okay, if you wanted to highlight that, then you should have started cutting down on government size and all those things way back from 2020. Okay, because you don't want to surrender your pride to the fund or something. Mm-hmm. But overall, I think that, yes, we've made some progress. We cannot run away from that. In fact, it will be strange for all the resources that this government has had. And then if I bear in mind, no government in the history of Ghana has had the privilege of managing resource envelope that this government has had. With oil inflows, with gold price, numerous taxes here and there. I mean, come on. But if you look at what this government has presided over and what we have to show for, you can see largely inefficiency at play. And I believe that if we had been prudent and much more judicious and adopted a lean approach to managing, okay, the outcome would have been much more glorious than what it is here. I want to believe, and I still stand by that, MFA, that this president in the first 2.5 years, really, you couldn't stop listening to the president.
Okay, look, if you pick free senior high school, I mean, considerably, we felt that it was impossible to even start it at that scale. But it was done. Of course, there were challenges. Then there will always be challenges with such radical interventions. But the president stood by that promise. The Minister of Education did everything possible. We had tracks, we had this and all of that. That is also leadership. This is the way we are going. There are some aspects of it that we need to fix. Let's fix that going forward. But we can't take it away that that is an important turning point in terms of our educational outlook. That is leadership. Look, MFA, the first 2 years of this president, in fact, how the Francophone countries, and we had colleagues in Cote d'Ivoire, Burkina Faso, and the others. In fact, they viewed Nana Addo Dankwa Akufo-Addo, His Excellency, as the Osagyefo of our time. Mm. Particularly when he boldly announced Ghana Beyond Aid in the presence of the President of France. With all that was happening within the Francophone countries, I don't know, somebody told me that it ended up from Osagyefo to being maybe Ojidefo or something. I don't link to whether that was how somebody like put it or something. But I believe that somewhere along the line, MFA, our president lost it.
Mm. Okay. Professor Bakwe, let me tie in energy closely to this and take initial remarks also from Benjamin Bwache, is the executive director of ASEP. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Really, you heard the president also talk about the fact that the sector, the energy sector, has been managed with discipline and expertise to avoid doom. So I'm told I don't have Ben Bwache, but let me then go into health before I come to the studios and talk to my two friends in the studios with me. Well, Kwame Sapoesiedu, you've been monitoring on health. There wasn't much really, but we're hearing the good news about the La General Hospital, the construction and completion starting. We are waiting for the performance tracker, which will be launched in March. But generally, I'm sure you were zeroing in on health, but I'm sure you look at generally the sonar that you heard. It painted the picture that you were expecting to be painted, you'd say?
Well, thanks, Abefa, and good morning to everybody. Yes, I heard the La General Hospital. It's going to be completed in 2018. I have said about sonars, if you listen since 1993, when Rawlings was the president, that it always has a particular track. The president comes to tell us what he thinks we want to hear. But as someone who always looks into health, I always try to tease out what the president didn't want to tell us. And that is what I'm going to look at. So let's look at something. Health is always tied to the economy, because the health expenditure per capita, which is the amount of money spent on a person per year, has a direct correlation to the total government spend and our GDP per capita. So what did the president tell us? He told us that in the first three quarters, Ghana was growing by about 2.8%, and that that was better than the 1.5% that was predicted that our GDP would grow. Mm-hmm. What does that really mean? I'm no economist, but there's one thing I also know, that for countries that have seen significant development in their health sector, they've had to grow at a rate three times their population growth rate. So if you look at China, when they had to do it, they realized that their population growth rate was unacceptable. Mm-hmm. So they introduced the one-child policy, and they were growing at significantly about 10, 11%, sometimes 15% for about two decades. Ghana's population growth rate by the statistical service currently is 2.1%, which means if we've got to do it and improve significantly in health, we have to be growing at about 6.3 to 6.6%. Mm. But the president was happy when we are growing at 2.8%. What does that mean in reality? It means our health expenditure per capita, which has been dropping since 2021, is going to drop further, which means that the amount of money spent per person per year on health is going to drop, which then means that there will be no fiscal space for a number of the projects. So you heard the president talk about commissioning a number of projects like airports and giving timelines.
Yeah.
Did you hear him give any timeline for any agenda 111 commissioning?
We are told most of them are 58%, 98% completion.
Yeah, but did he give a timeline? He was given timelines to commission certain things this year before he goes. Mm-hmm. Can you give me a single timeline he gave for any Agenda 111 project? No. The answer is there's no fiscal space to complete those projects. But then what does that mean for you and me as Ghanaians? You see, your health expenditure per capita has three components. It has how much the government spends, how much the citizens spend out of pocket, and how much our development partners spend. Since 2021, the amount that the government spends per person per year has been dropping. As at last year, it was 31%. Citizens were spending about 52%. So you were paying more out of pocket even if you had NHIs. And the rest was from our development partners. With the current budget rate and what the president is saying at 2.8%, we are going to drop about 3 percentage points low. But who's going to pick the 3 percentage points? You and I. So the public component of our health expenditure per capita is going to go to about 55%. Meanwhile, your inflation is 23%. So your real spend as a Ghanaian has dropped. Ghana has one of the lowest outpatient per capita. That's the number of times any person sees a clinician per person per year of one. In that one visit, the doctor has to get your diagnosis accurate. If you have to pay more for that one visit, people are not going to attend. And if they are not going to attend, it means they are going to be diagnosed late. If they are going to be diagnosed late, it means the health outcomes are going to be poorer. If it's going to be poorer, then what we see with a bulge in our midlife crisis where a lot of people are dying young, below our life expectancy, is going to increase. And so our life expectancy dropping from 64 to 63.8 years last year might drop further down, which has impacts on a lot of things, even on our what do you call it, SNITs, pensions and all that. Because if you are retiring at 60, and 55% of all Ghanaians who retire at 60 are dead by their 65th birthday, are we going to restructure our pensions? Look, what the president told me in the State of the Nation address, after doing all the maths and doing all the correlation, made me very, very sad when it comes to health. And I'm not mincing my words. If anyone wants to do the debate, I'm more than happy to do it. You can look at the numbers critically. And I'm happy that you and Professor Bokping are on here because they are economists and they can do the numbers to a much finer detail than I can.
Yeah.
And they can speak to this more. But all I want to tell Ghanaians is the state of your health system, forget about there not being defibrillators here, what we call it, renal machines there and all that, is that based on what we've been told, you might have to take out a bit more money from your pocket to keep yourself alive. And worse still, the government has kept that cap on the NHIS funding in place. So your NHIS card may not do you the justice it needs to do, especially in an emergency. This is why I'd want to leave it.
Well, we've been running a series here at Joy News on the NHIS implementation, and it corroborates most of the things that you said when it comes to out-of-pocket payment when we go to the hospitals and to keep ourselves alive. And we've been putting out in that, and it's all on our social media platforms as well. And I'll tie in energy, bring back energy, and I'm told Ben Mwache has joined us back via Zoom. And then we'll take a break on this, and then we'll talk about the passion of the nation before we would wrap up on this conversation when it comes to SONA. So, Ben, thank you so much for joining us, if you can hear me. So I was asking earlier about the management of the energy sector. You heard the president. He says they've managed it with discipline and expertise and to avoid doing so. And the fact that they've made a lot of savings when it comes to that GOG team that was put together to audit some of the payments that were made to IPPs, amongst others. Generally, apart from the situations that we witnessed this week where the ECG has actually apologized for, amongst others, really, what's our state when it comes to energy?
Thank you very much, MFA, and thanks for having me. And then good morning to friends and colleagues on the show. Yes, I heard the president, and I thought that, you know, the state of the energy sector as we have it today, and if the president had the opportunity to brief us on what is actually happening in the energy sector, he could have done a lot more to give us a better perspective on where we are as a country. What we have now is not just a challenge with payment to IPPs, but a composite challenges that we do have in the energy sector with fuel supply, with generation systems, and the rest of it. And how much all of that crystallizes into a fiscal challenge for our country. And I think that is where I saw a deficit in the presentation. If you look at how much government is supposed to put up cumulatively every month, it's about 250 million Ghana cedis to be able to offset the inefficiencies in the energy sector. And all these payments are being made by the people of Ghana. So what that simply means is that when power is generated, transmitted, and sent to the distribution company, ECG, almost half of what they're supposed to recover cannot be recovered. And therefore, Ministry of Finance has to intervene on a monthly basis to the tune of about 250 million Ghana cedis. That is the state of the energy sector. So what that means is that the money that we need to be able to pay other commitments like roads, health infrastructure, education, is being used to pay electricity bills. I don't think that is a rosy situation that anybody should celebrate, that government pays that much. And even that paying has become a challenge because the money doesn't even exist for government to always respond to that commitment. And what we see going forward is that it's even going to be much more difficult for us to meet those payment obligations because of the fiscal challenges that we do have. And I was expecting some pragmatic actions to really deal with this problem, to make sure that ECG can live up to its responsibility and save the public purse from this leakage, from this waste that we are actually experiencing in our country, and cut down on the optics that, I mean, only Bryce Simon describes it better, that, you know, people can just wake up and tell us anything and they expect that that is it, we should consume it. Sort of enchanting all of us to go along a certain communication line rather than the actual truth and situation on the ground. And that is a big, big, big problem for all of us. We have people stealing power and we don't have a solution to it to be able to address the theft. And then you see the optics. You know, ECG goes to stand before Parliament and say that I'm disconnecting Parliament. Even at one point, they were at Ministry of Finance to go and disconnect Ministry of Finance. When people are stealing power, but those who can, you can actually account for, those you can see consuming the power, and then you can realize that in debt and chase them for the money. Those are the ones you are disconnecting and chasing them. And you look at the fact that the Ministry of Finance and government is paying up to 255 million Ghana cedis a month. You shouldn't even have the moral temerity to even go close to any government facility to want to disconnect.
Even if they are owing as much as 23 million? Really, what are you saying? That if they are owing them, they should not go after them just because they can see the money? There are those they say that they cannot see. So the ones that they can see, shouldn't they go after them? 23 million was Parliament was owing.
What you cannot see first. You have to prioritize your actions.
Okay.
You should go for what you cannot see. And forget about the optics for now, because government is even paying...
For you, it's all about the optics from what the ECG is doing. It's optics, you're saying. It's just for the optics?
That is what I'm seeing, that it is just the optics. They are not dealing with their own inefficiencies and their own lack of accountability to ensure that the power sector improves. And if you read even government reports, PRC's report on the cash waterfall mechanism, PRC consistently for the past 3 months have said that ECG is not complying with the cash waterfall mechanism, which is to ensure that everybody gets some money from what is collected. They decide to spend the money the way they want, rather than bringing the money into the pool for the money to be accounted for and shared according to a formula that has been approved. And PRC even says that The president himself directed that ECG should comply with the cash water form mechanism, and they have ignored the president.
Mm.
Right? And that is the state of the energy sector.
Mm.
And you look at their own spending inefficiencies. Let me give you some few examples. Where ECG in August 2023 tells the people of Ghana that their exchange rate was about 14 cedis to the dollar.
Mm.
And they bought $43 million from the banks at 13.95 to the dollar. That is equivalent to almost 80 million cedis of exchange loss. I don't think even Abuchis were charging $14 to the dollar in October 2023. Mm. All right? So this is the leakages that are engulfing the energy sector. And we expect that leadership deals with this problem and get people to be accountable and not, you know, siphon resources through these kinds of schemes.
Okay. Well, you've been...
We are not even learning that, you know, recently they changed their billing systems and isolated it from the ECG corporate and gave it to a private sector. And that private sector is taking about 6% of all the revenues that are collected. And you look at ECG collecting upwards of about $1 billion every, a billion cedis every month.
Mm-hmm.
That is over 60 million cedis of our revenue going for just revenue collection.
Mm.
So you put those just exchange losses and the collection fee, you are in excess of 100 million Ghana cedis every month.
In all this, though, in all this, Ministry of
Finance sacrifices our budget to give to ECG to pay its bills.
Okay. But Ben, in all this, at least from the unstable power supply situation that we witnessed most part of last week, for instance, we've been hearing from the ECG boss offering that apology that many people were asking for and insisting that there was no need for a load shedding timetable because it was just a situation they had with Senate and that Dumso is not back. You deal directly. You have your ears on the ground, or your ears and eyes on the ground when it comes to the power situation and energy sector. What really is the situation? Is Dumso lurking around the corner? Are we facing a crisis that we are not being told about?
No, I think they were load shedding. On Super Morning Show, I gave, you know, historical data on daily basis how much load were shed.
Mm-hmm.
And even in some instances, we're supposed to shed as close as 630 megawatts a day, particularly during the peak period. So the deficit was too significant for anybody to have come to the public and even tell the public that they, we are not shedding load. There is no challenge with generation. All right? And they expect the public to just consume that and go on with their lives. We have challenge with generation.
Okay.
Demand is expanding, and therefore the gas that we use to generate the power is not enough. Mm. So we need to have some stocks of liquid fuel to be able to bring on plants that can actually convert or use dual fuels so mm-hmm. that they can have access to liquid fuels to be able to generate power. We didn't have stocks of the liquid fuels to bring them on.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, we had some power plants going on maintenance. TECO is not generating as much as it should. It's been down. We had SunPower also going out. But we have plants that could have stepped in if we had fuel to generate power. So we had significant deficit that had to be accounted for. And the way to even manage it was to sacrifice the exports. All right? So we're exporting to Togo, Benin, Burkina, and Greco has been cutting supply to those countries so that they can reduce the impact of the deficit. And even if you discount that, we still had close to 300 megawatts of loads that were being shed, which needed proper communication to let the people know that we don't have enough generation and therefore we're going to be taking out our power. And we don't know how this is going to pan out in the coming days. If we don't get more gas from Nigeria, pay them on time for them to sustain supply, and also get some liquid fuel.
Mm.
This situation will persist for some time to come.
Okay, so your verdict is that the sector may not have been managed with discipline and expertise to avoid doing so, like the president mentioned.
No, I think the inefficiencies have been too graphic. its impact on the budget. And we have done the analysis to show consistently, we've been talking about this, how much we spend in the energy sector. If you put the entire social sector together,
okay.
Roads, education, health, we are not spending anywhere close to how much we are spending to keep the light on. And that cannot be a disciplined management of the energy sector. It's been woeful, and I think the way to go is for us to address the problems and the challenges that we do have so that it doesn't persist and also drain the budget the way it is doing.
Okay. Well, Bembwache, thank you so much. It takes us to a quick break. We have still outstanding. We have security, we have sport, and the general discussion with my friends in the studios here on the State of the Nation address as put out by President Akufo-Addo. This is Newsfile. We're right back after the break. Please do stay. Thanks for staying with us here on Newsfile, made possible by Bank of Africa, MTN, Ashesi University, Robert and Sons Optical Services, My Way, Syntest Tanks and Flamingo Paint. Let's talk about the passion of the nation. Recently, most of us were talking about LGBTQ, but really, football remains our passion as a nation. And it found space in the State of the Nation address after that fiasco at the just-ended AFCON in Ivory Coast. And Fentou Tahiru Fentou will do justice to that for us here on Newsfile. And we had the president. He talks about scouting, grooming and developing talent at the districts and grassroots levels under a presidential policy on football to be unveiled as part of rescuing our football, and then also build regional and national juvenile teams for boys and girls. And GFA and the National Youth, Ministry of Youth and Sports will be collaborating on that. But really, Fentou, thank you so much for joining us. Really, didn't we know about this scouting and grooming and developing talent? Is it a new thing such that we are going to put it under a presidential policy on football?
Thank you, MFA. My opinion is that I don't think that it's absolutely needed at all. I think it is a redundant policy that will serve no purpose whatsoever. We have current structures that we have neglected and trying to create new ones. So if you take the development of football at grassroots level, for example, we've had a template that worked for us just a few years ago. You have a whole national sports college that was built in 1984 for this exact purpose, which was to groom and scout for talent at the district level, regional level, and bring all of them together at one school to continue to groom them. And that was not even just about only football alone. And I'm talking about the National Sports College in Winneba. Successive governments have left it to rot. It's now become a hostel facility for students at the University of Education Winneba campus. Some of the facilities are being rented out to private individuals, and everybody has turned a blind eye to that particular facility. But really, that was the purpose of that. So this region, we still play inter-school sport at primary school level, at GSS level, at the secondary school level. And what used to happen and should be happening is this, that when you play the primary school in the schools, you select the best players from all the regions and bring them to the National Sports College in Winneba, and they form the under 12 team. Then you play the JSS competition, you bring them, they form the under 15 team. Then the secondary school competition, you bring the best players to Winneba Sports College, and then they form the under 17 team. And it's a school, so they continue to go to school there, and then they continue to train. And this is not just football, because it has 8 tennis courts, it has badminton court, it has boxing gym, it has everything. We built that for that exact purpose. But everybody has completely neglected it and left it to rot, and now we want to create new things. And for me, that's probably the biggest issue with us and our approach to sports development. It's almost as if that we just keep creating new things and nobody actually cares about the existing infrastructure. And my opinion is that there is a lot of infrastructure that is capable of addressing maybe 80 to 90% of our problems. You take, for example, one of the things that the president mentioned. He said the government has constructed over 150 AstroTurfs across the country. And he's right. Those AstroTurfs exist across the country, but it appears that the construction of those astroturfs was not born out of any clear-cut policy direction. It was almost as if it was a fever that caught up with many people and then spread like a pandemic. Mm-hmm. So then every MP basically wanted to have one in their constituency for many reasons other than football, because a lot of these have now served as social gathering grounds for funerals, for weddings. But the football itself, and recently, in fact, 2 days ago, Asamoah Gyan, who is on the
Manifesto Committee,
exactly, on Twitter to criticize the conversion of a lot of these community parks into astroturfs. And the reason he did that is because we have spoken about this a lot, because these astroturfs that they've constructed are not meant for football, or they defeat the entire purpose of football development for two reasons. Reason number one is that 90% of these astroturfs built across the country are not football standard pitches. Okay. So you know that very few of them can actually host professional football.
Okay.
So it's a problem. So they exist, but we can't even use them to play football the way we want to. And then the reason number two, which is a really big reason, is that you notice that a lot of these astroturfs also do not meet the international standards for actually playing football. And they have been proven to cause injuries at a younger age,
okay,
mostly because astroturfs that we have across the country are 2G, and these ones are not installed with shock absorbers. So then when you're stepping on the astroturfs, it's almost as if, you know, it's bad for your knees. So there is that as well. And for me, I think one of the things that we need to do going forward, we need to bring all of these things under a coordinated effort so that every single facility we are putting up is serving a purpose. One of the biggest dangers that we have right now, MFA, is that in this country, we do not currently have a single sports stadium that is capable of hosting a Class A match when it comes to the Confederation of African Football or even FIFA. So the Babaya Sports Stadium, which has been hosting games recently, has had to go through a lot of compromise. So authorities have had to compromise a lot for that facility to host matches. So we have a big impending problem where in a couple of years, they will stop compromising if we don't actually go back to the
So the problem, the problem with football is like is not just on the field of play. It appears that all the ingredients needed
Yes, so basically the results that we have seen...
But is there hope? Is there hope, really? I know maybe for the female team there is really hope, at least we've seen their performance. But really, when it comes to football at that level, when it comes to the Black Stars amongst others, should we still be putting our hearts in there? Is there really hope in salvaging the situation?
Of course there's hope. You have to, without hope, we basically will just give up on everything. There is hope, but I think that the president mentions, he spent 11 paragraphs on sport, and spent one of it on the Black Queens. And then the irony is that in that one paragraph he spent on the Black Queens, he spent it lamenting the lack of attention that the Black Queens have received.
And I was hoping he would give us a solution to that and say that on authority something is going to change.
Exactly. And you know, recently we've had to clamor for them to be paid their bonuses.
Yeah.
But I think that the structures exist. We just need to recommit into the sports at the grassroots level and do this one important thing. Stop the over-monetization of the senior national team. I think that is the root of our problems. We need to focus on grassroots development. And for me, I think the structures exist. We need to fix the Winneba Sports College and then start to get our players there as well. We've had good players come out of that system. The SCS, Lai, Kinsing, Samuel Inkums, all of them came out of that system. It's been proven to work. We can make it work again.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's Fentuo, Tahiru Fentuo, tackling the area of sports and the issues in particular when it comes to football. And they've been waiting their turn for a long time. Let me come to the studios and Sam George and Dindiok Pemka are with me in the studios on this. So you've heard at least the general, you know, overview in terms of the reactions to the SONA. It appears they say the president has already left and there was nothing. I will be reading some of the messages that have also come in as a result. Some of them say that they know the state of the nation already, and that's not what the president put out. That's not the picture that was painted. Really, tell us.
Well, I will prefer that whenever they say such things, they should mention specifically what the president said that was not true.
Mm.
You know, because you have to discuss everything within the context of what he said. If he indicated anything and you think that it's not true, then
so key, why was there no corruption? Why was there no mention of corruption?
I'm going to talk about that. You see, I'm going to address it. Principally, MFA, corruption is not fought with rhetoric or statements alone. It is fought with actions and the legal regime. That is what corruption is, how corruption is fought. If you look at, I have stated this time and again, and I want to reiterate it, that it was during His Excellency's first term in office, from 2017 to 2020, that we enacted most of the anti-corruption laws that will actually strengthen our democratic dispensation. And so the implementation of these laws will take the fight against corruption to the heights that we actually desire and clamor. I refer you to the Right to Information Act. You know, prior to that, you know what was happening in our system. Many public institutions could engage in certain acts that were unconscionable and corrupt and et cetera. And then you could go asking for information. For a year or more, you would not be given anything and you were stranded. You didn't know what to do. Today, we have the Right to Information Act in place. And then even recently as last week, the Information Commission had to fine a state institution, I don't remember precisely, a state institution for refusing to give information and then ordered them to give the information to the entity that was looking for it.
Yeah.
That's a very big step. The passage of the Right to Information is a very big step that cannot be glossed over when you're looking at a fight against corruption. Again, MFA, let me refer you to this. And I heard my sister comment about the fact that His Excellency didn't talk about corruption. But let me refer you to this. I said it elsewhere, and I want to reiterate it here, that never in the history of our country have we experienced members of the ruling government being prosecuted in courts than it is being experienced now. Never, ever. And I want to challenge anybody.
As in, you're talking about the numbers, or it's never happened?
The numbers of people who are prosecuted by who are members of the sitting government. And you can mention them in the Office of Special Prosecutor. They are without number. And probably, I'm saying probably, if we hadn't brought the Office of Special Prosecutor Act into existence, most of those cases may not.
You've heard his lamentations, haven't you?
You know, so if you look
heard
at
him, you've heard him lament on how difficult it is to execute or do his work under the circumstances.
It has never been rosy. And elsewhere in the world, it has never been rosy. In Ghana, it will not. To fight corruption, you can't find it on a silver, fight it on a silver platter. You recall that the Venerable Amidu had to throw in the towel along the line, and etc. And in the same way, he's also lamenting, and etc. But the point is that I'm saying principally that today, as we speak, you find that the former PPA boss is being prosecuted. Again, you find that a former municipal chief executive nominee in Ashanti region is being prosecuted.
But if you've done so well in that sector, how is it that it did not find space in the president's State of the Nation address, which is the penultimate one?
You see, the point is that if you listen to all the things I'm talking about, I'm saying that if it was not found there in clear expression, that may have been an oversight on the part of the speech writers. But so much is being done about it. I'm saying that the fight against corruption cannot be won overnight. If I can continue itemizing them and listing them in their numbers, the number of cases that are currently being prosecuted, and those people are members of the ruling government, which in history we had not experienced much, except one or two that we have had. But because of the very reason for the enactment of the Office of Special Prosecutor, which was that the will by the Attorney General to prosecute one of his own, now we have this entity which is doing its work. It may face the difficulties, but eventually it is a marked improvement over the status quo.
What happened to the fight against illegal mining?
Again, the fight against illegal mining is one particular part that all of us, and I have been an advocate, I've been on this platform with many, advocating that we need to take the fight against illegal mining to the skies. Because the way at which we're going, I even said that we're likely to commit mass suicide, you know, because the activities we're engaging in and compromising with these illegal miners, polluting all our waters, we're going to come a day that we're not going to have even water to drink. And that we are getting very close to committing mass suicide. I've said this time and again, the president sent out
put his presidency on the line. And you know,
and we've repeated this, it's now become a boring one to the ear, that the majority, 90% of the areas where we have Galamsey ongoing, the president lost all those seats in 2020. And it was because of the fight against Galamsey, quite clearly, no other reason. Because if you look at most of Prestia, Wuni Valley, you have a lot of the areas, NPP, New Patriotic Party, lost it because the fight against Galamsey was taken to another level by the president. Mm. Again, as we speak, it is still ongoing. The minister is still engaged in that with the military.
The fight is still on?
It's on. Mm. Perhaps we are not seeing the burning of excavators, which was the situation in the past. And that is because maybe there's a shift in the focus and et cetera. But again, the time that is left for us to even discuss the issues in the State of the Nation's address,
compared
to myself and my brother. Mm-hmm. Because if I'm going to look at the various heads mm-hmm. and do the discussion as I'm supposed to do, I will need not less than 30 minutes or so to be able to make any impact at all. Because if you look at the various heads, you just spoke to my younger brother, Fintu, but he also, and then my in-law, but he, okay. my son-in-law. Mm-hmm. But he failed to state something, that under this government, a lot of sports infrastructure have been constructed than any other government in history. Mm-hmm. He failed to acknowledge that. And I thought he should have done so before making his conclusions and then other analysis that he did. Because if you look at currently, the Lagos Sports Stadium is ready. Mm-hmm. And then the Boteman state-of-the-art facility is ready. And in all the 10 traditional regions, we have stadia ongoing, at least some of them youth centers constructed and completed. Others are at various stages of completion, and et cetera.
And some of them also existing, abandoned.
We have some AstroTurfs mm-hmm. that have actually been constructed and completed. Some of them, you also fail to acknowledge that some of them are standard.
Okay.
Some are not. Others are. You also fail to acknowledge that. So, I mean, it is public knowledge, and I want to challenge anybody to tell me any government since independence that has constructed more sports infrastructure than the current government. There's none. Again, if you look at education, you know, I mean, we've spoken about the free senior high in the midst of the difficulties has not been abandoned. It's actually been expanded, and many more children are enjoying and benefiting. Again, in the midst of all the economic difficulties, payment of allowances to nurses and teacher trainees have not been withdrawn. It is still ongoing. Health insurance is ongoing. And the payments are even more effective.
And
because
people are paying out of pocket. I've told you about
that
series.
I've also heard mm-hmm. service providers, I mean, not holding press conferences and saying they are not being paid as it used to be. It is even now improved.
The because most of them are being victimized when they go out to
speak
about it.
Even in the midst of the economic difficulties and all that. So the education sector, they may be challenging. Look at the STEM schools, about 10 of them, very beautiful schools. Mm. That could, if you want to construct e-blocks, that could construct hundreds of them, and et cetera.
Okay.
So there is, look, it is an act of pretense for somebody to sit down and say that everything is rosy.
Okay.
It would be a huge act of self-deception to say that everything is rosy in this country. It is not. But we are moving gradually and going towards that land we are clamoring for ourselves. And you realize that Professor Bokin stated it, even in his submission, about the fact that the president compared the previous year or two to the current year and then said that there's an improvement. It is true. Mm-hmm. If inflation was at 54 and we brought it down to 23, that is certainly commendable. And even targets that we set
as a comparison of your own record to your own record.
No, yeah, of course. But it is an improvement. If you can bring it down from 54 and you know that the circumstances that spiraled the whole thing to that level, that is the 54,
okay.
The circumstances where most of them were, I mean, factors that were out of our control and jurisdiction, and we've been able to manage to bring it down. Even if you look at the targets that we have for GDP growth and et cetera, we've had to revise and all that. We've gone beyond some of the targets that we are supposed to have set for ourselves and et cetera. Those are commendable. Again, I say this and I add the caveat that everything is not rosy. The difficulties are there. I mean, people's pockets are not as they would have expected, and etc. But we have made tremendous progress, and the president stated it in the State of the Nation's address.
Okay, let me bring in some George, then we can wrap up on the State of the Nation. Really, the president mentions that definitely there's been some stumbling at some point. It's not all doom and gloom, and paints the picture in terms of our State of the Nation.
MFA, thank you. Finally, I get a chance. But before I proceed, let mm-hmm. me just use this opportunity as a son of the Gan state, Gandangwe boy, son of the land, to state emphatically that the comments made by Professor Audrey Gajepo that there are gang cultures or traditions that support homosexuality are not just false, but very, very derogatory, and the gang states take strong exception to those. If she doesn't have evidence, she should be very careful the things she says about the gang state. Now, onto the State of the Nation's address. It's important to state that the president clearly is lost and at sea when it comes to the State of the Nation. He doesn't understand what's going on. He's checked out as president of the country. And like was rightly stated in Parliament, you have a driver Banza and a mate who is interested in chopping trouble. Driver Banza, Wekun Kroforma, has actually killed Ghanaians. Over 19 Ghanaians lost their lives at the renal unit of Kolibu simply because we could not pay 4 million Ghana cedis. And this was at the time that we had paid $2 million, which is equivalent at today's exchange rate of 26 million Ghana cedis for a phantom project called the SkyTrain. This is also at the same time we spent $12 million on Ejapa when there was actually nothing to be benefited by the Ghanaian state. This is also at a time where we've lost $2 billion thanks to the PDS scam. Meanwhile, we are with cupping handbag in the IMF for just about $1.3 billion. When the president says that the La General Hospital is going to be completed in 28 months, yes, he said, Kwatren Kwasi Obema Wuntuma, Tieni Ding. This is the same president who, on the 17th of August 2021, in commissioning the Agenda 111 hospitals, said they'll be completed in 12 months. This is the same president who made a commitment through his finance minister that will be commissioning the National Cathedral on the 6th of March 2024. The 6th of March is in 4 days' time. So, MFA, let me, on behalf of His Excellency, invite you and Kwemka next week, Wednesday, for us to commission the National Cathedral on the 6th of March.
Mischief detected.
The president, there's no mischief. I'm just quoting the president. The president went to visit victims of the Akosombo Dam spillage and told them that he has not minded them because they don't vote for him. And people said, he said they don't vote for him.
No.
Yes or no? Did he say they don't vote for him?
No.
Yes. MFR. People said, his spokesperson came and said, we are misconstruing it. No. When he came to do the State of the Nation's address, the biggest disaster in the past year since he came to Ghanaians is the floods and the Volta Basin floods. When the explosion happened at Apiase, he mentioned it in that year's State of the Nation address.
That I agree that my people needed some.
But he failed because he doesn't consider them worthy of mention.
No.
Look, let me tell you something. And one of these days, I would take my time to show how it is human negligence that led to the Volta Dam spillage, because they knew, the engineers at VRA knew. I will give you dates and all of that, but that's a different conversation will come. Mm-hmm. But clearly, the president does not regard... Mind you, the president dispatched his mate, Aplanke Baumia, to go to Sierra Leone with $1 million of our taxpayers' money and relief items when there was flooding in Sierra Leone. Yet the president thinks that the people of the Volta Basin... This affected 13 constituencies, even people up north. The president did not speak about it. As for Galamse, the president's party is the biggest purveyor and perpetrator of Galamse. Persons in the NPP, national executives of the NPP, are the biggest purveyors of Galamse. They are destroying our water bodies. How can he speak against his own party? You've forgotten what his party's first vice chairman, who is now a parliamentary candidate, said. Party here, Sika. They need money. How can he speak against it? Wait, before I go to unemployment. Corruption. Mm-hmm. How would President Akufo-Addo speak about corruption? I have always stated that President Akufo-Addo and his government are the biggest beneficiaries of corruption and political corruption. Okay. You can't run away from it. Corruption has fought President Akufo-Addo, flawed him on the ground, and is spitting on him on the ground. Mm. He cannot speak about corruption, and that's why the president was silent about corruption. Because from the presidency down to the district level, which is the lowest level of the centralized government system, it's all saddled with corruption. You were kicked out of government because you refused to be part of the corrupt at the Attorney General.
I disclaim this. I'm not part.
Listen,
is that true? I know nothing about that.
Play the game. He and his former boss have been kicked out.
I know nothing about that.
You understand me? Let me tell you something. Let's call a spade a spade.
I know nothing about
that. The president
issued a disclaimer.
Oh, but why?
I know nothing about that.
He's a parliamentary candidate for his party right now. Else they will come after him. But listen, the president and his government have worn corruption as a rope. And they are gleefully dancing in the faces of Ghanaians with it. If we want to talk about corruption and who is corrupt, the person the president appointed as his first special prosecutor said President Akufo-Addo is the mother serpent of corruption. The current special prosecutor is crying.
And that has been disputed.
He is crying and speaking about the fact that he's been impeded by elements of government.
He talks about the judiciary. He's raised concerns about judiciary, not elements in government.
Oh, wait. Mm-hmm. He raised his issues about the judiciary, mm-hmm. which exists, and also raised the fact that the same issues Martin, what's his name? First one. Martin Amidu raised about funding for his office. And when he did, what did we not see? The president's boys at the Flagstaff House decided to come and attack him and say that he had ordered for a bulletproof vehicle. Yes or no? Am I lying?
Because this is true. Because issues about luxury vehicles that he wanted.
That was the president's response to the claim that he is not funding the office that has been set up on unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
MFR. The president could not say a word on unemployment. When his mates,
but he talks about 1D1F, for instance. Wait, he talks about 1D1F on page 25 and the number of projects they've undertaken in that sector and the 170,000 jobs created.
MFA, the president,
mm-hmm.
his mates, who he has picked, who he says is the best presidential candidate the NPP has ever had, meaning Kufuor and he himself. Do not even cut the mold. I don't know, maybe best in line or something. Maybe he could be right. But his mates said they had created 2.3 million jobs. Yet the president could not speak about unemployment. The president when the president spoke about numbers relative to jobs, he said 600,000 self-employed people had registered with SNIT. Again, a lie by the president.
Okay.
Because the director general of SNIT the previous week had said 60,000 people. But before you mentioned 1D1F.
Mm-hmm.
When the president was talking about 1D1F and promising 1D1F, they said they were going to build factories in every community. In fact, Anthony Abeifakabo told us that there will be dog meat factories in some constituencies. They had this chat with every district and the factory that will be created there. Today, when the president is thanking people for 1D1F, he's thanking Kasapreko. Kasapreku, which was there before he came, which was there.
His thanks to Kasapreku was on the after and going to Kenya.
That
was exactly why Kasapreku was thanked.
But Kasapreku is now 1D1F. B5 is now 1D1F. NS Chemist and Co. are all 1D1F. These are all factories that existed before them. But MFR, let me show you what the figures say. In 2016, mm-hmm. when President Mahama was handing over, President Mahama didn't make noise about 1D1F, even though we had supported over the setup of over 60 factories. Listen, in the industry sector in 2016, the economy grew by 4.3%. In 2023, the industry sector grew by negative 1.2%. In manufacturing, and in 2016, it grew by positive 7.9%. In 2023, it grew by negative 1.0. When you come to the construction sector, in 2016, grew by positive 8.4%. In 2023, grew by negative 5%.
Why are you comparing only 2023 and 2023? That's disingenuous.
No.
Why are you picking only 2023 and comparing with 2023?
The Sona speaks about 2023.
No, but that's comparing.
I am picking figures from the budget.
Okay.
The 2024 budget
doesn't
give you 2024 figures. It gives you 2023 figures. And I'm picking the last budget figures in 2017, which gave the 2016 figures. So the two figures I am mentioning are figures given by the then Minister for Finance, now Minister for Finance International.
This is disingenuous.
You know, Ken Oforiatta, he gave us the figures in 2017 and 2024. And those are the figures I'm using. So it shows you that even when the president says macroeconomic indicators are looking forward, it's not true.
Okay.
Look, they say we should praise them that inflation has come down from 54%. But wait, though. Who took it to 54%?
Okay. Well, let me take some messages.
Who took it to 54%?
Let me take some messages.
In December 2022, our debt to GDP
was 56%. In December 2016, our debt to GDP was 56%. In 2022, 103%. Now you are telling me that we should thank you because inflation has dropped from 54%.
Let's take some.
When we handed over
let's
to
take,
you,
let's take messages.
15.4%.
Let's take messages.
The only thing I agree with him on is that the time you've given us is not enough.
Well, let's do some messages that you've sent.
That the only thing.
Well, Dr. Kwame Asasanti sends us this one. Says we should ask Pemka whether he accepts the conspicuous omission of corruption from the SONA as normal, and he should not deceive himself into believing that the government is doing anything meaningful to win the fight against corruption. He should reconcile what he's saying now with figures from the Transparency International, and he will know that his government has simply lost the fight. We have this one also, says state of nothing address, SONA, Ghana's state of hopelessness and despair. That's a freak. Dauda the Servant says SONA was full of lies and inaccuracies. Senor Joseph says emptiness, self-praise and another smart way of milking the state. Ops World, is there anyone that doesn't know that the state of the economy, okay, he shouldn't have even told us. He says everyone knows what the state is. T_Ness says he has already said unless a new government comes to rescue us. We all know that things are not going well as a country. Excellence Rain says the president failed to address Galamsey because most of the government officials engaged themselves in it. If we all remember, 500 excavators got missing and Professor Frimpong Boateng said the party needs money. Their own Ashanti regional chairman is also into Galamsey. And then Adrino Greatness says, of course, the talk and promises are just too much with no action. I think it's time for us to stop talking as a country and use action because action, they say, speaks louder than words. And one from the Population Council board says, your panelists hit the nail on the head with the population growth rate of 2.1, development will continually elude us. And that's how we wrap up today's edition of Newsfile. I've been sitting in for Samson Ladi Ayenene, who will be back shortly. I am MFR Pau. There's more when you log on to myjoyonline.com. I think we should say a good happy birthday to Honorable Esibebwa. Today is his birthday. Well, yes. Happy birthday. And that's how we wrap up today's edition of Newsfile. There's more when you log on to myjoyonline.com. Have a good afternoon.